There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 899, August 16th, 2021. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. I say all quiet on the F1 front, but NASCAR and Indy cars keep humming. Now back to Mr. Rogers, the chirpy bird of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Mercedes quits Formula E. Russell has no guarantee he's going to Merck. The host breaks down in Monterey. And this week, our sponsor is Cafe Luna in beautiful Carmel Plaza in downtown Carmel, California. I want to thank Philip Pegler for a wonderful meal and his beautiful Cafe Luna. So everybody, Cafe Luna will be sponsoring F1 Weekly for the month of August. Keep up the good work, Philip. We love you. And just a reminder, we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the support F1 Weekly tab on the F1 Weekly front page. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing very good, sir. Thank you. First question I have for you, do they have Ortega burger or in-flight burrito at Cafe Luna?
They have Ortega ramen.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
It is. It's awesome. This is a great little place in Carmel. If you're going to Carmel, you go to Cafe Luna, mention F1Weekly.com, you get charged an additional 10% just for laughs. But no, I'm not. I'm just kidding. It's a great little restaurant. Coffee's good. The desserts are great. The homemade pot stickers, the hospitality, the mother-in-law. We're all just kissing and hugging over there. It was glorious, glorious. Of course, Monterey was a great weekend. We'll talk about that during the podcast as we continue in this wonderful last podcast of the 800 series, because the next podcast will begin the 900 series. So, Nas, there you have it. I had a wonderful weekend at Laguna Seca and everything else that happens in the Monterey Car Week.
So what were the highlights for you, sir?
Well, the highlights for me was Tuesday. Cars on the Avenue in downtown Carmel, had breakfast, had lunch, saw some beautiful vintages. And the irony, and I'm sure you'll be stunned at how small this tiny world is. So there was a beautiful Matra Bonet restored to absolute pristine condition. And I'm looking at this car and I'm going, who owns this car? Well, I knew that the president of the North American Renault Club would be here, and he knows a lot of people. And I talked to Marvin McFalls, the president, and he said, oh, we know where that car came from. That came from the Lane Museum in Tennessee.
Very interesting, because when I went there, my friend in Nashville called them about the Matra, and they said it's on loan. So now we know where it is.
Exactly. The Matra was in Carmel downtown, and Mr. Lane of the Lane Museum had brought it to the festivities, and it was a beautiful car.
And was it in French blue, sir?
No, it was in French red.
That's good. Interesting. Very interesting.
Very interesting, and what a small world. But that's how the thing moves along for us people in the motorsports and automotive industry. But yes, it was fantastic. Great cars all weekend, from Alphas to 1995 McLaren F1 cars that sold for over $20 million. Saw Zach Brown, and he was in his racing suit. Not a sight you want to see every day.
Yes, any other ex-racing drivers? You said Parnelli Jones and George Farmer were going to be there.
Yes, I could not find them. They may have been at a meeting of the greatest of all time kind of folks. Still, I had a great time. I mean, the featured mark was Ford, so it's not the greatest of the greatest. But I do have good news for people. It was just announced that the feature for next year's Motorsports Reunion at Laguna Seca will be cars from the 24 Hours of Le Mans.
That is very interesting. That gets my attention.
Yes, it's going to be very interesting. We'll have people from all over the world that have participated in Le Mans. So now we have something to look forward to, because don't get me wrong, I love Ford. I do believe it's a better idea, but it had been done just recently. And I think Laguna Seca was just trying to fill the void with the COVID situation. But next year, the announcement of the 24 Hours of Le Mans being the feature race and the featured cars, it's going to be very exciting. I suggest everybody, you have 1 year, get your act together, come out and meet the F1 Weekly familia, and we certainly will be there, because this is going to be an exciting race. I mean, we could get Pescarolo, Gis van Lennep could show up. You know what I'm talking about?
Jackie Ickx could be there, and I would love to see the John Weyer Gulf Color Porsche, the Gulf Color Ford GT40, and Ferrari won there last time, 1965. Matra, man, 3 years in a row. And also Renault won the race too. That'll be a very good collection of cars and drivers and racing people. Count me in, sir, Mr. Host with the most.
Absolutely. And of course, the big news for me is Fernando Alonso will do some special laps in the Formula One car at Le Mans next year, which has never happened before, but it will be a display of F1 Alpine. And of course, Alpine is hoping to win Le Mans 24 hours. So it's going to be very good for Alpine, for Fernando. And if we could get Fernando out to Laguna Seca, I'm talking about a serious party. So anyway, I've got more stories about Laguna Seca, about me breaking down in Monterey, about me having a good time. So take it away, Ness.
When you say you broke down, I mean, did your traction avant broke down, or you got too emotional and started crying like Mika at Monza and also Michael Schumacher at Monza?
If I had taken the traction avant, I would have never broken down, because that car is machismo. But I had just rebuilt the Porsche. Everything was going great. And on Saturday, coming home from our marvelous dinner at Cafe Luna in Carmel Plaza, well, I heard a noise. I pulled over, and it was a simple but hard to find part that busted. It was the generator pulley, completely shattered, and I could not find one anywhere. So I towed the car home. But in the end, I had a fantastic weekend. Nevertheless, I'm a positive guy. I met positive people. I met people that pulled over to help us out. And one gentleman, I think he was stunned because I was wearing my Kimoa hat, my Fernando Machismo-ness hat. And the guy told me, he honestly told me that when he saw me, he told his father that he had never seen anybody else wear a Kimoa hat except Fernando. And now, of course, the host of F1Weekly.com.
Wow. Bravo. Bravo.
Lots of fun, but these turned out to be great people. His name is Kevin. He was with his father. We had a good time. He stopped and helped me. He tried to find the part for me. This is what automotive family is all about. You know, we all work together, hang together, and fight together. But they were very nice people, and I made them a great deal that I really can't talk about on the program, but they had a great time, and I think we have lifelong F1 Weekly members.
Very good, sir. Very good, sir.
Thank you very much, Nas.
Yes, sir. And shall we, let's do our podcast, and I have some ideas what to do with my time in January, so we'll talk. And maybe you can give me some direction. So shall we start with the normal programming now?
Please.
Okay, we're going to start in style of Shakespeare. To boo or not to boo? You probably heard about this. Ex-Grand Prix driver Jan Lammers, who is now the boss of Zandvoort Circuit, because of what has happened in recent events, he is requesting Dutch fans not to boo Hamilton if and when he takes pole or victory among the sand dunes of the Seaside Circuit in September. Now, there were some question marks about this race going ahead. The Dutch government has said it can go ahead with reduced capacity. So something is always better than a whole lot of nothing. Now, because of this, there will be a little bit less booing as the numbers of fans attending has been reduced. So, you know, these things happen. And Jan Lammers said, and I quote, "If Hamilton comes to the Netherlands for the Grand Prix, please make sure he is treated with respect instead of this vulgar booing. Show your decency when a seven-time world champion comes here. We should be proud of that. It is downright antisocial and unwise to yell boo. Respect is something you have to show if you want to get it for yourself." End of quote. Now, the question I have for Jan and the host of F1 Weekly is this. Will Dutch hunks high on Heine behave in the house of Max if Hamilton clips the wings of Red Bull on Sunday? No pun intended, as always. What say you?
I hate to say it, but I think the request for no booing is very elegant, very appropriate. I think he's right. Respect is always good. He is a seven-time world champion. But as you saw in Britain and how Lewis Hamilton was celebrating, you know, Max was not too happy with that. So I don't think the fans will be disrespectful, but I hate to say it, there will be a tremendous amount of booing.
I totally agree with you. Boys will be boys. And I would like to see what happens if there is some argy-bargy and Max drops out. Whether Max drops out or Lewis, there will be some sort of a big noise that will be heard around the world. So we shall see how it goes. Next, sir, on a sad note, very sad note, I should say, we come to Dial M for Murder. On Sunday, the general manager of Spa-Francorchamps, Nathalie Maillet, was shot dead by her husband, Franz Dubois, who also shot and killed Nathalie's friend who was visiting before taking his own life. Franz Dubois was also involved in Belgian motorsports, and I understand he used to race himself. You heard the story, I'm sure, Mr. Rogers?
Very, very sad.
Yes. But unfortunately, murder-suicide is nothing new in motorsports. You may recall a few years ago, Robbie Gordon's dad killed his wife, who, I heard from a very reliable source, had apparently stabbed him while he was sleeping, and then, you know, he took his own life. Robbie Gordon made his name in off-road racing, and the king of off-road racing, Mickey Thompson, was killed, victim of contract killing by his ex-business partner. And I think it took over 20 years for the police to arrest this guy because they did not have, you know, good evidence to go after him. On the other side of the pond, we had Didier Calmel, who was an investor and sponsor in the Rouge F1 team. He killed his wife in what was called crime of passion, and he got his get out of jail card after serving a very short time, which is very, very pathetic. Famous Alfa Romeo designer Vittorio Giano, who was of Hungarian descent, took his own life in 1965. He also worked for Enzo Ferrari. And sir, speaking of departed souls, the heart and soul of Scuderia Ferrari, the one and only Commendatore Enzo Ferrari, passed away. It was in August 1988. So, you know, last week was his death anniversary. And this was only a few weeks before Gerhard Berger led a Ferrari 1-2 at Monza. Merci, Monsieur Jean-Louis Schlesser. Were you watching this race live, sir?
Yes, sir.
I was watching as usual with my two buddies, and we just could not believe what happened. But at least two of them were very happy because they were not Senna fans. Enzo, we're just going to take a look at Enzo Ferrari and his team, just a brief, you know, glory moments of this team. Enzo himself started out as a driver, winning the Coppa Acerbo race in Pescara 1924 and finished second in the Targa Florio in 1920, I believe it was. And Targa Florio is a race Dr. Marco also won once in his Porsche. Enzo's autobiography was called My Terrible Joys. It was the death of his son Dino that made Enzo not go to races. And now we look at some famous days gone by, not recent history. Man from Argentina, Jose Fraulein Gonzalez, gave Enzo his first F1 victory at Silverstone in 1951. Enzo's passion was reflected in his comment, remembering this great occasion, which gives me industrial strength chills every time I hear it. And that was, Enzo said, the day I felt like I stabbed my own mother. Very, very impressive. And, you know, of course, he used to run the racing department of Alfa Romeo, and one of his star drivers was Signor Tazio Nuvolari. His paisan, Alberto Ascari, was the first Ferrari world champion in 1952. All seven Grand Prix events were won by Ferrari, Ascari winning the last six races of the season. And in those days, the Indy 500 was also included in the championship, and that's why it says seven Grand Prix events, Indy would have made it eight races. The first British F1 victory, which has become a common theme now, came on board a Ferrari, Mike Hawthorn, winning the 1953 French Grand Prix at Reims, also known as Reims in plain, simple English. The great Juan Manuel Fangio took his fourth title with Ferrari. Mike Hawthorn was also the first British world champion driving the red car, and that was in 1958. The last ever Grand Prix won by a front-engine car was a Ferrari at Monza 1960 with American Phil Hill driving, Phil Hill from Santa Monica, Cali. The following year, Phil would become the first American to be world champion in the beautiful Carlo Chetti-designed Ferrari 156, that shark-nosed Ferrari. You know, when I was at Goodwood Festival a few years ago, they had a, because, you know, Enzo destroyed all the original 156 chassis, I mean, cars. But there was, Ferrari has authorized some, you know, replicas to be made. And one of them was there. And, I mean, such a small, but such a beautiful machine. Moving forward, Monza 1966, all Italian, Funicoli Funicola, as Ludovico Scarfiotti wins for Enzo. No Italian has won a GP at Monza since then, which is very, very sad. I do recall, I believe it was Teo Fabi in the 1980s, and he got pole position. I think it was in a Benetton. But I was hoping he would make it happen, but it did not happen. So, sir, Ferrari remains the most magical, mythical, and successful name in motor racing in Formula One since the second race of the 1950 season. You're a man of motorsports history, sir. Would you like to add anything?
Well, for me, Phil Hill becoming the first American world champion with Ferrari, that was really a big deal. I mean, a lot of people don't remember it, but it was a huge deal. And for an American to be so machismo in an Italian team is not an easy task. On the other hand, the Enzo days produced such fantastic cars, and I saw many Ferraris over the past weekend being in Monterey. I mean, many Ferraris, and the best part, they're all driving on the road, having a good time. Even my friend's 275 1966 Ferrari, which belonged to his father in the 1970s, which he bought and sold for $14,000, was at Pebble Beach. This car sold for $8 million a couple of years ago. And unfortunately, the owner of this beautiful car was very rude to the son of the previous owner. And of course, it's somebody you know, Dan Gentile, our friend. And Dan was very disappointed that the owner would not talk to him very long about the ownership that his father had on the car and the history of the car, and he was very disappointed. So if you own a Ferrari, can you do me a favor? Never be a dick. Thank you. Exactly.
And you know what is interesting about, you said Phil Hill becoming American world champion. It's interesting, you know, there was an American Formula One world champion long before there was a world champion from Germany or even your Shangri-La Francia. Isn't that interesting? And, you know, even to this day, which I find very, very strange, you know, given all the talk, you know, that Americans don't like Formula One. To this day, U.S. has produced more world champions in terms of drivers than France, and same number as Germany in terms of drivers. You know what I'm saying? No, Germany would be three. I'm sorry, because Nico Rosberg should have been finished, but he was German. But that's very interesting.
It is. History is always a wonderful thing to study.
Yes. And you know, what I find very disappointing is, because it's been such a long time, there was an interesting race in 1978, Dutch Grand Prix. I don't remember the exact number. It was won by Mario Andretti in a Lotus. And on when he won that race, the number of wins were equal between Lotus and Ferrari. I think it was either 72 or 74. Look how different destiny has become for the two teams. And that was the last time an American driver won a Formula One race. And that's pretty sad. So maybe, you know, this kid that McLaren took in, Hugo Chukwu, or the other kid who's in Red Bull program, Jack Crawford, he's from Texas. His nickname is Jetpack. He's doing a pretty decent job. So hopefully one of these youths will pull it off. Okay, sir. Money makes the world go round, and also the cars that go round and round at NASCAR and other places, they are also fueled by dollars, petrodollars or Venezuelan dollars, but money is required. I don't know if you've ever been to this website. It's called racefans.net, which I visit regularly, by the way. There's a gentleman by the name of Dieter Rankin. He is the main journalist, and he is originally from South Africa and now based in Belgium. I see him at the races, and he is very well known for investigative and reliable racing journalism. And if anybody ever watches the FIA press conferences, especially with the team principals, he digs in pretty deep. But that's very interesting. And he has good stuff. So anyway, he wrote a story on this website. It's called, Is Formula 2's $3 million admission price good value for aspiring F1 drivers? And we all know motor racing is very expensive, sir. Nothing is cheap anyway. But some of these items he wrote, you know, just listen to this. He quotes a 2015 survey, this is like, what, 6 years ago now, by Reuters, reported that parents spent about $120,000 on a season on national-level junior karting for 10-year-old kids. A single European race weekend easily will cost $20,000 doing it on the cheap. So this is no wonder Mazepin's and Latifi's are having a good time at the top. A 6-year karting career therefore could cost a family anywhere up to $2 million. Formula 4, depending on team, country, and series, requires budgets of between $250,000 to $300,000. And cost of Formula 1 is regulated by FIA in every country. Not everybody has $250,000 lying in their back pocket. And by the time a race driver hits Formula 1, at least $7 million will be blown away on getting there. And that is just to go and knock on the door. The split is approximately $2 million on karting, $500,000 per season in Formula 4, another $1 million, actually it's a little bit more now, on Formula 3, and $3 million plus on F2, Formula 2, previously known as GP2. And this is the reason why you don't see minorities and ladies in racing. It's just very, cost of entry is just incredibly high. And listen to this, Formula 2 is the final frontier before Formula 1. It says here the dropout rate from Formula 2 to Formula 1 is around 90%. Isn't that amazing?
Wow. I had no idea. I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, that's most of the field.
Yeah, exactly.
And not only that, when you think about it, if that's the case, then if you make it to F2, you've actually had a successful career.
Let me just put it this way to you. Given the cost of racing, okay, I cannot tell you how many young drivers I have spoken both here in the US and overseas. And we're talking about kids coming out of karting or in their first year of single-seater racing. And I've mentioned to them that the way Formula One is now, the other day I was looking at Clark at the drivers in Formula 2, Formula 3. So we're talking about 50 drivers. And I'm going to tell you something. Of those 50 drivers, if five of them are in Formula 1 3 years from today, I will be shocked with a capital S. That so many will drop out. But what I was saying about this cost of racing, I've mentioned to these parents mostly or managers, and I only do that if they ask me for my opinion, because I'm not going to go and tell somebody what to do. That if you race here in the United States, you know, here in the US, there is a karting shootout at Laguna Seca every year. And I think there are some certain age requirements. But regardless of where you're coming from and how you look, if you win that shootout, the organization, Anderson Promotions or whatever it is, they give you a fully funded ride in, I think it's in U.S. Formula 4. If you win that, you get a fully funded ride in U.S. Formula 2000. If you win that, you get a fully funded ride or most of the budget in Indy Pro Series, which is equivalent to Formula 3. And if you win that, you get pretty much fully funded ride in Indy Lights, which is the American version of Formula 2. And if you win that, they give you a $2 million credit and guarantee you three races in Indy cars. And one of them just happens to be a race you may have heard of. It's called the Indianapolis 500. And I can't believe these parents, they'll have a kid stuck in a series for 2-3 years, and they're still dreaming of Formula 1. I mean, you know, and everybody knows, if you really want to get to Formula 1, you better win Formula 2 in your first season and be no more than 20 years old. Because if you're going to win at 24, 25, nobody's going to look at you. And because if you win at 25, chances are you have spent 2-3 years in Formula 2 or 3-4 years in Formula 3. And which brings us to the, you know, you talk about Formula E, Nick DeVries. This kid was the biggest name in karting when he was young. There was so much hype around him. He was in the McLaren program and his manager was Anthony Hamilton. And it took him 3 years to win the very basic Formula Renault Euro Cup. And that pretty much killed his F1 aspirations. So there you have it, sir.
Keep up the good work, Nasser. Reality hits you in the face. No, it's brutal, but, you know, they say it is nothing but pariah and everything else nipping at your heels. So Formula One is extremely difficult, and that's why you have to have the respect you have for somebody like Lewis Hamilton, who's going into the Netherlands hoping not to be booed. You know what? The good part about the Netherlands is they're all motorsports fans. They've seen Hamilton around for a long, long time. If there's booing, it's not out of disrespect. I think it's mostly out of support for Max and making him feel good that his people are with him, the House of Orange is with him, so on and so forth. So we'll see what happens in Holland. But in the meantime, I'm thirsty. Nasser's thirsty. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back after this brief message.
As they come to lap 76, closing up on De Angelis, and Arnoux pops out and has a look. That's Jody Scheckter in the background has been lapped. Arnoux has another look. And Villeneuve locks up his tyres. He is trying very, very hard indeed. Fourth gear, up into fifth when they go over the crest of the hill, up to 160, 165 miles an hour as they come down to the right-hander at Villeroy. And it's there that they can pass, and Arnoux's going to do it. René Arnoux is challenging for second as they come up to Villeroy, but Villeneuve will not give way. Arnoux's got the inside line and the shorter line. And he takes second place as they go into the right-hander and the left at Sablière. And now Renault's indeed are first and second in the French Grand Prix. And the French crowd is going mad, roaring in the background. Now, this is incredible. The twin-turbo Renaults appeared at Monaco, not their circuit. And now we're into the start of the 79th and last lap but one with René Arnoux second and Villeneuve go. Incredible! Villeneuve stood on everything, locked up his tyres, got the line, and he's back into second position on the last lap but one, and the French crowd aren't very happy about that, and who can blame them? This is incredible. This is the 79th lap in this 80-lap historic French Grand Prix, the oldest Grand Prix of them all. This is the 65th Grand Prix, and there has never been a more exciting battle for a major position than this one with such French interest. Jabwe still ahead. And he's closed right up on Villeneuve, and he's going to try again. They're coming into the start of the last lap behind Jochen Maas in the A2 Arrows. And Arnoux does it, does he? And Villeneuve locked up. And Villeneuve has had to go wide, and Arnoux's on the inside as they go round Villeroy. He's got the shorter line. He's got second position. He's got second position. He's through. They bang wheels. He's off. He's off. And he's back again. René Arnoux off the circuit and back again, and he's, and now Villeneuve's in second position, and this is the last lap, and Villeneuve goes over the corrugations and he nearly loses the front as they go up to Parabolique on the 80th and last lap, and he's back, he's in second position. Villeneuve is second in the Ferrari, down to third position goes Arnoux to La Bretelle, 80th lap in this 80 lap race. And there's less than a third of it to go. Now, can Arnoux, on the tremendously fast La Combe, Courbe de Poix section, 150 miles an hour, get past? They go past Jochen Maas, and Jabwe wins. Jean-Pierre Jabwe has won in the Renault. Who is going to be second? Villeneuve is at the moment. Arnoux is in third position. Into the Courbe de Poix they come. There is Riccardo Patrese, and Villeneuve is second. Arnoux is third. Behind them and lapped are Jochen Maas and Jody Scheckter. And an incredible, heart-stopping French Grand Prix.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And we will start with another small country, but very, very big on motor racing and motor racing contribution, Austria, MotoGP, a doubleheader at Red Bull Ring. Great shocking win for local manufacturer KTM. Late in the race, with six laps to go, it started to rain and most riders came in for wets. KTM rider from South Africa, Mr. Brad Binder, stayed on slicks, and Lewis's Lady Luck was visiting Austria and started smiling on him as he went on to win the race. So that was very, very good. This was like Vittorio Brambilla winning in a March, the Austrian Grand Prix many moons ago. Italian Francesco Bagnaia overtook seven riders on the final lap to finish second. So that was very good performance from him. And Senor Jorge Martin from Spania was third. Both these youths were on Ducatis. Surprisingly, no Honda or Yamaha in the top six, which is very, very rare. In the championship, sir, your homeboy, Fabio Quartararo, leads with 181 points. Joined second on 134 points are Francesco Bagnaia and Joan Mir. Formula E, you said, okay, let me just finish this and then you can tell me more. Formula E, Mercedes wins the world championship with a Dutch driver, the aforementioned Nyck de Vries, okay? And last I read that Mercedes was threatening or thinking or rumored to be pulling out. Have they confirmed that, sir?
They have confirmed. It's done. They're running towards the border. They've had such a great string of luck. They've had Lewis Hamilton. Mercedes is a conservative company. They're not hog wild and spending money and wasting money. So once they get everything they could possibly get out of F1, they will pull out. We just don't know when that is.
Yeah, and you know, last year Nyck de Vries won the Formula 2 championship, and now he has won the Formula E championship in his rookie season. And now there is his supporters or media, whatever, there is a push to get him in Formula 1 with Williams or Alfa Romeo, which may not be a bad idea. Because I got to tell you, man, even people like him, Ross, Alexander Rossi, Fabio Limer, who did very well in GP2 and Formula 2, If they're given a decent chance in a Formula One car, they can make it. But that's where the problem is. Who's going to give them a decent chance for a couple of years? You know, it's not happening. So these people should know, people who are pushing for Nyck de Vries, that money squeals louder than Formula E cars and champions. Sad, but true. Okay, sir, World Rally Championship. Look at how the global landscape of anything and everything is changing. Two Hyundai cars finish ahead of three Toyota cars in the Rally of Belgium. And rally was won by a local driver, which is good, Thierry Neuville. Okay, and your homeboy, Sebastian Ogier, was fifth in his Toyota Yaris and leads the championship with 162 points. Indy cars, they were on the road course at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Will Power from Australia gave track and team owner Roger Penske his eighth victory on this configuration from 11 such races. And it was win number 6 for Power himself. Did you watch any of this thing, or were you all totally immersed at Laguna Seca?
Correct. I was totally immersed at Monterey, Laguna Seca, and unfortunately, television was not a high priority. So I missed all the antics. I missed Allmendinger winning. I missed a lot of good stuff, I have to admit. And it's typical. All of a sudden, IndyCar and NASCAR gets exciting when I can't watch it.
Well, speaking of AJ Allmendinger, next we come to NASCAR. They were running on Sunday. IndyCars ran on Saturday. And for the first time, the boys were making left and right turns. Needless to say, it turned out to be very challenging. Through all the body slamming, cautions, and red flag, man from your neck of the woods, I think he's originally from Los Gatos, came through, Mr. AJ Allmendinger. He is one of the few drivers who told Dr. Marco, "Danke, aber keine Danke," or "thanks, but no thanks," in plain simple English. He told me this himself when I, lack of a better word, intercepted him in the friendly skies as he was coming out of the loo on a big old jetliner. And Scott Speed got the ride with Red Bull, which was initially offered to AJ. And of course, Scott Speed becoming a Formula One driver gave us the great and immense opportunity and pleasure to meet his mama and grandma at a roadside cafe in Manteca, California. And Mr. Rogers, you know, you mentioned about podcast 900. Hopefully we will live to see the day we do 1001. And one day we will look back at all the craziness we have experienced and enjoyed, like doing an interview with Olivier Panis at Lyon Airport, Fräulein Gonzalez at an Alfa Romeo dealership in Buenos Aires, going to palatial residences of Stirling Moss and Tony Brooks for a chat on motorsports. So this has been a fun ride, and hopefully it will continue for a while. Which, Mr. Rogers, brings me to what you were saying, top of the show. But you were happy, but I'm frustrated due to this nonsense virus and all that's going on. I don't think this virus is disappearing like fever in the night. So what I'm thinking is, if situation improves a little bit, then maybe I should take advantage and cross the pond and go fishing historical sites like high on the bucket list and places I've never been to, which would include Rouen and Dijon-Prenois in France, Bremgarten Street Circuit in Switzerland, places like Crystal Palace in London and Aintree in Liverpool. Another item very high on the agenda is Targa Florio Circuit in Sicily, and I would love to drive there, the 40-mile Targa Florio Circuit, and hopefully I can. You know, last March what happened, I was planning a trip there, and I even went to the Targa Florio website. There's a very nice organization there, and I came very close to sending an email to some person. You know, I would like to meet somebody who speaks some English, and some, I have some, you know, local guidance and all that. And it would be nice, as I was talking to Davide Valsecchi, that if he comes there, we can rent an Alfa Romeo, and hopefully it won't break down for the 43-mile of the circuit, and drive around. Wouldn't that be beautiful, Mr. Rogers?
It would be very beautiful. And I have somebody that you should contact to help you in that endeavor, and that would be Mr. Donald Osborne. Of course, from Jay Leno's program, Donald Osborne and his Italiano kind of passion for the Targa Florio and being an American. He's very passionate about helping people. He's very friendly. He's super approachable. I suggest you send an email to Donald Osborne.
That's a very good idea, sir, because I'm very serious on going to some of these places. You know, my current job is going to come to an end in December, and so I will have time in January. And I'm also planning a trip back home. So I'm thinking, you know, another place I want to visit, Mr. Rogers, which you have recommended, is the Schlumpf Museum.
Unbelievable. One of the best museums ever attended by the host. Of course, they're famous for the Bugatti. If you Google Schlumpf and his history, filled an entire train full of Bugattis and shipped them to the Alsace region of France. It's great because it's such a good location. It's a beautiful place. You could drive over to Germany, have some bratwurst, or you could just have some bratwurst right there in Alsace. It's fantastic. You see the storks on the houses. It is a beautiful experience.
Yeah, you know, it's very important for me because when I was not even 10 years old, my uncle who worked for Castrol for a long, long time back home, he used to bring racing magazines for my brother and I. And I remember once he brought us, it's just like a sort of a very glossy paper. It had like 6 or 8 cars, profile of these cars, and a very little verbiage or story there. And the two of the car, of course, there was a red car, but the two cars I remember very well. One was the green Van Wall, and the other was the Bugatti, a blue, French racing blue. And that has stuck in my mind, both this. I remember once with Mr. Brazier, we went to Donington Museum, and I showed that Aston Martin that I had seen as a very young kid. So this is very important for me, and if the COVID does not go totally crazy, then I'll probably be able to do some of these stuff, these places I mentioned. And if we can get some people to, I don't know if they will be interested in doing an interview, but if I can drop in a few places in England and Germany and get some interviews done, that'll make me very happy. That will make up for the last 2 years of this COVID nonsense.
Absolutely, Nasser. I think you should do it. You should go. You'll get plenty of interviews. And of course, I think that you're going to really enjoy Laguna Seca next year with the 24 Hours of Le Mans being the featured exposition.
Yeah, definitely. And there is a possibility. I'm looking at some, you know, I went to this Lane Museum because I want to go see places, you know. I mean, I don't want to be at home because of this COVID all the time. And now there is some movement going on. But there's a chance I might come to Cali and go to the Long Beach Grand Prix. I've not been there in a long time. And there will also be a sports car race there. And there is the Peterson Museum. So that will be good. And sir, quickly, next weekend racing action. Listen to this. This coming weekend, I should say. Still no Formula One, but we have Le Mans 24 Hours, Indy Cars, Tin Tops from NASCAR in Michigan, which is a fantastic track, to DTM at the Nürburgring. And talking of Michigan 500, the old race, man, if somebody has any interest in seeing the 1984 Michigan 500 and the battle between Mario Andretti and Tom Sneva, I mean, that's what oval racing is, and at its very best. I will highly, highly recommend it. And of course, Michigan is where they had the great battle between Monty and Michael Andretti many years ago. And that commentary on Eurosport from Ben Edwards is one for the ages.
Fantastic, Nass. Nasser, another outstanding job. Once again, we have one more week without F1 racing. But as you said, motorsports is bubbling everywhere. So it's going to be very exciting. And once again, we have Le Mans coming up. If anybody forgot, it's not in July this year. It's in August. So I am so pumped up to see Fernando do those exhibition laps in his Alpine. I think he's going to have a little sign on the back of the Alpine say, "Hi, Lewis, how are you?" But yeah, that's going to be exciting. Fernando at Le Mans, you know, he's won Le Mans twice. You know, he's pretty machismo.
He has gone from Renault to Toyota. You know, like the song, "Around the World I Search for You," you being championship number 3. But no uno, dos, tres, woole, woole for him.
Woole, woole. You're absolutely right, Nass. He will suffer and carry that to his grave. But in the end, He's still a fantastic driver, and he proves it every day on the track. That's what's so wonderful about it. It's honest, it's loving, and I love every minute of it. So anyway, once again, I want to thank Philip Pegler. I want to thank Cafe Luna. Don't forget Carmel Plaza in downtown Carmel on Mission and Ocean Avenue. Please. I want to thank Kevin and his father for an outstanding job. I hope you had a good time. I know you had a good time. And we're going to see each other again next year. I want to thank everybody who listens. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.